This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to The Good Life. I'm Guy Bauer, Food, Wine, and Fun Fears. That's what we do. And don't forget tonight, 6 p.m., Facebook Live, Good Life Guy brings to you a virtual tasting. You still have time to go to any Jacob Liquor store. These wines are available anywhere. But doing wines from Columbia Crest Grand Estates, I got three red wines. It's on goodlifeguy.com that I'm going to do, the Merlot, the Red Blend, and the Cabernet. I added the Chardonnay today because I wanted to have a wine to sip on towards the end of the program, and so there you have it. Great stuff, and I'll tell you more about it not only later in the program today, but tonight I'll give you some history and some of the stalwarts, not only of the Washington wine community, but of Columbia Crest Grand Estates. The book we're talking about today is so cool. It's called The Berkshire's Farm Table Cookbook, 125 Homegrown Recipes from the New England Hills. It's so much more than a cookbook. There's some really great stories about the farmers who make it happen, and we would be remiss if we didn't mention Chef Brian Ahlberg. I think Robert mentioned him in the beginning here, but he's president of the Culinary Development for Main Street Hospitality. They run some cool stuff in the Northeast. He was, I think, the primary chef at the Red Lion Inn and the break room at Greylock Works. He's a CIA grad from Hyde Park, and the recipes are really cool. All right, you guys, you can pick who's going to talk next, but
thank you, Guy, and thanks for mentioning our collaborator, Chef Brian, who's an old friend and is a fantastic chef and created some fabulous recipes inspired by the farmers that we met in this journey of over almost 5 years.
Wow. Deciding what recipes was probably easier for him to do than you guys didn't have to worry about that. But I imagine it was a chore deciding who you were going to feature in all of the small producer farms and agricultural folks that are in your neighborhood.
So it's funny you said that, because I think we said in our introduction to the book that we actually feel, well, if we didn't say it, we meant to say it, we feel guilty because we had to stop at some point. There are, hundreds of farms in this area. And by area, it's a really large part of the northeast of New England. It's not just Western Mass. And we basically, after at some point, said, okay, enough. Let's stop. We can't keep going on and on. But I feel badly because we missed wonderful, wonderful stories that need to be told of other farmers.
But the advantage of having social media, Guy, and thank you for mentioning our website, BerkshiresandBeyond.com, which links to Facebook and Instagram, is we can add some of these other farmers that we didn't have a chance to write about. So we're trying to be inclusive as much as we can. But, yes, it was a challenge to stop.
And also a challenge in picking recipes in the sense that, or choosing which recipe represented a farm. There are farms that produce 90, 100, 150 type varieties on the produce side. I'm not talking about the meat farmers, and there's a significant number of meat farmers in this area as well who are featured in the book. But how do you choose what's their best crop? What's the crop that we want to use to create a recipe from? Some are pretty obvious. There's a farm I can think of called Woven Roots. which is in Tieringham, Massachusetts. Beautiful farm. We went to visit them, I guess probably early on in our process. And although they're known for, you know, a number of products, they handed us a carrot, which is one of their signature items. And you think carrot, you know, we've all had carrots. Carrot's a carrot. Mm-hmm. Yes, carrot isn't a carrot. And to this day, we remember the taste of that carrot because it was so extraordinary. We'd not tasted a carrot like this. And in fact, the farmers, Jen Salinetti and Pete Salinetti, told us that they actually would give as presents for their kids, the birthday parties their kids were invited to, packs of carrots. And these carrots were greeted at these birthday parties with such excitement because they were so known for their phenomenal carrots.
But along the lines of how did, you know, we choose recipes, you know, sometimes a farmer would tell us his story about, and we would ask, you know, do you have any recipes? And as we say in the book, many of our farmers are so busy in their lives that they really don't cook a lot. But some of them do, and some of them had some ideas. And one of our farmers, who his name is Dick and Crane, really funny and a really great story, old New England family, told us about a recipe called burnt carrots, which we feature in the book. And Elisa, tell the story about Dickin and the carrots.
Sure.
It's in our book.
You'll think the book is all about carrots. I want to promise everybody we have many, many other foods highlighted in the book besides carrots, but these are two carrot stories. So Dickin, who comes from the Crane family, which is the stationery family. I think they made currency, et cetera. And he is, he's got the family farm right now in Lanesboro, Massachusetts. So when we asked Dickin, does he have any recipes? And by the way, farmers cook because they have to eat and they cook their food, but they don't have the time for the most part to write very intricate or very, you know, whatever instructions on how to do things or make up recipes. Anyway, so Dickin said to us, here's my recipe. He said, I stick a bunch of carrots in a pot with a little water, and I walk out of the room, and when I think I smell or when I smell that something's burning, like the house, the carrots, et cetera, I come back to check, and then they're done. And he called them burnt carrots. And we give the recipe for burnt carrots. We roast them. It's a little more controlled. The smoke detectors won't go off, but the carrots get the same burnt, quote-unquote, effect that Dickin was striving for. Very simple. You can these extremely easily. Add a little orange zest, a little flavor, but the carrots are what makes this recipe again.
But another story that another farmer told us, his caretaker farm in northern part of the state, and they're talking about kohlrabi. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, vegetables that most people don't use or they're not familiar with. And the farmer there, named Bridget Spann, said, you know, I use kohlrabi in chili. And, you know, Elisa will tell that story.
So we got together with Brian, had our little discussion about, okay, what should we feature on this farm? And said, Brian, so let's try kohlrabi chili. And so there's a recipe for kohlrabi chili. If you can't find kohlrabi, it's an unusual but common in both cases vegetable. But if you can't find kohlrabi, you can use broccoli stems. And again, if there's a message, overall message of the recipes is that you can sub in and sub out nonstop in any one of these recipes, and frankly, generally often in recipes, and you'll come up with a phenomenal gist, dish. The issue is just, you know, again, using fresh when possible. But kohlrabi, I think we've got two kohlrabi recipes, one of kohlrabi slaw and a kohlrabi.
Yeah.
And by the way, I have to tell you, it's not like I cook with kohlrabi a lot either. And now I know what kohlrabi looks like and cook with it. We have celery root recipes. Again, it's a vegetable that people might walk by at a farmer's market and say, what's that? It's got these like hairy projections, whatever. And we have a wonderful recipe for celery root and apple soup and some other celery root recipes. I think a celery, like quote-unquote mashed potato kind of recipe. So, you know, one of the things that eating fresh helps you do also and going to farmers markets helps you do is to be very expansive in your view of what you eat. So it's not always just, you know, tomatoes and cucumbers. Learning to experiment with other things is a wonderful gift of buying local and pursuing farmers markets to offerings.
Well, you know, you talking about carrots, I think, Elisa, you and I spoke a bit by email about the carrot soup that my wife fixed, and it was good. It was really good. And then you made me think, yeah, it would have been a lot more fun to have carrots right out of the ground in your neighborhood. And we do burnt carrots all the time. And we cut them a little different, but oven roasting vegetables in particular, good quality, nice carrots is the way to go.
Great. Yeah, and, you know, oven roasting, right, it brings the sugars out. Take any vegetable and oven roast it, and you've got a really premier dish, no matter what the vegetable is, and carrots certainly work there, too. But that soup is a really good soup. And it's funny, I'm just thinking about that soup. I think I garnish it with mint on top or something. If you don't have mint, garnish it with something else. It's got sage in it. You can mix up, so many things. And, again, when you go to a farmer's market or you shop, if you shop that way, it's really good to come without a, preconception almost of what you need. You know, everybody goes shopping with lists, but sometimes it's good just to walk in and say, that looks good, I'm going to try it. And it'll be a recipe, I guarantee you, that will help you learn to what to do with it, know what to do with it.
You know, I got a confession to make.
Go on.
I hope my wife's listening. On the stove when she made the soup was the pot, and the soup was almost done, and she made me taste it, and I said, no, I don't think it needs a thing. It was a little thicker than what she had anticipated, and I thought, if anything, maybe a little more chicken broth to thin it up or whatever. But you don't want to do too much because it's perfect. Well, next to that on the stove was a pot of boiling water that I was seasoning up to boil some shrimp in. And I went to the spice rack, and I got some celery seed to add to my shrimp water.
Right.
And I put it in the soup. And my wife, I didn't even recognize that I did that. You know, I pulled it out, put a few good shakes in there, probably almost a tablespoon. And she tastes the soup later and she goes, oh my God, did you put celery seed in the soup?
What? She's an incredible sensation.
Of course I didn't. I didn't do that. Well, I put it in the. Oh, God, did I?
Well, you guys have good palates. I know that,
wow.
Except for wine.
When I went to cooking school, one of the challenges at the place where I went to, which was in Boulder, Colorado, none of the spices were labeled. You had a lid, and you couldn't stick your nose in it because, of course, that would be, not hygienic.
Right.
So you literally had to just sort of take a little faraway whiff and know what spice it was.
Oh, yeah.
And if you didn't get it right when you were making whatever it is you're making, if you put in chili, as opposed to, let's say, smoked paprika or whatever it is you're looking for, but, similarly colored things, that's the way it goes. So, it works sometimes.
I love it. My wife's only fault as a skilled kitchen technician is this is not a fault. She will follow a recipe the first time to the T. And then later, when she makes it again, if she wants to change something, she feels free that she can do that. But her fault is she gets me to taste it. She doesn't taste stuff. And I'm thinking, honey, I love you, but you could never be you're not going to go on Guy Fieri's home chef thing, okay? Because if you don't taste, you don't know. Anyway.
Totally.
But
yeah.
You know what? You make a really interesting point because I totally relate to your wife. How many times have I said to my son who's walking by, or Rob, and I said, could you taste this? What do you think of it? Now, the reason I even mention this is because I think that we all need as home cooks, and that's what I am as well, despite my training. I consider myself a decent home cook. You have to have confidence that it'll be okay. And while it's wonderful to ask people for help because everybody has a different palate, I think this issue of confidence is something that's really important for home cooks,
yeah.
Not to be fearful about screwing up.
And I think one of our messages in the book, Guy, along the lines of being confident, is that, when your listeners go to that farmer's market you mentioned, they should be confident enough that they can be open to the whatever looks freshest and appealing. We have a wonderful interview with a chef who was one of the pioneers of farm to table in the Berkshires. His name is Michael Ballin. Sadly, he passed away about a year ago. And Michael said to us, he said, instead of deciding what the evening's menu should be before you arrive at the market, allow the serendipity of the garden's harvest to decide your menu. And I just love that quote, that saying, let's be confident. You can try new things and just see what looks best in the market and then decide.
Yeah, and while you guys are talking, I'm looking at some of the photography. I imagine some that you took, Robert.
Yes.
This aloo gobi, I would go without chicken, and you could make it vegetarian. Cauliflower roasted in a cast iron skillet. And then two pages back, look at these scallops. You're killing me.
Yeah, that's Dan Smith's recipe, who's the diver scallops with cauliflower. He is also, that's John Andrews Farmhouse Restaurant. Dan Smith is also one of the pioneers and earlier farm table chefs in our area, still cooking away, and even during this time of the pandemic, has takeout, and just a really terrific chef. And we love the recipes that we're using in the book from Dan Smith, including that one, the scallops with cauliflower.
Yeah, really good.
Would you mind if I just, you know, you mentioned aloo gobi, and I just want to stop if you don't mind for a second, because the story of those farmers that inspired that recipe, I think, is a really quintessential story about small family farms. By the way, those particular farmers were vegan, and which is why we have different versions of this recipe, because I don't know if they would make it or not with vegetarian chicken, but I thought I'd throw it in. And you'll see in many of these recipes that I've actually veganized or vegetarianized them to give people options. But anyway, the farm, Hofdance Farm, husband and wife, couple from Queens, New York. They were not farmers. They had just read the writings of various people who were, you know, into Back to the Land movement, et cetera, and they decided they want to become farmers. And they eventually found land in upstate New York, in part of the Berkshires, and they started farming. They're totally into no-till or almost virtually no-till farming, which means they really hardly disturb the soil because they want to keep the carbon in the soil, which many farmers are concerned with for environmental purposes. And they are, you know, very, very pure in terms of what they use on the property and what they use to grow the stuff that they do. What they found is that it was an incredibly hard life. And I think after, I forget how many years it was that they had been farming, I think it was 2015, maybe they'd been farming 6-7 years by that point, they made $3,000.
Oh, God.
And they were really happy that they made money. And they said to us, I'll never forget, they said, you know, look, we didn't plan on using our savings, and we don't have a huge amount of savings, but we really had to make this work. And by the way, they're very ingenious. The farmer, one of the farmers, Damon, took a commercial washing machine and jerry-rigged it to basically become a spinner for like a farm spinner, you know, to dry out vegetables, etc., washing vegetables. And it was just incredibly clever. But they both said, both the husband and wife said, that even though they hadn't planned on using up their savings, and even though they hadn't planned on not making the money, you know, that they didn't make, they said they were so glad they did it. They said they lived according to their principles, and this is what really has driven them in their life, and that they would not have done it over again any differently.
So they have a CSA, and they have a little farm store going on now, and they're just good folks. They're just really wonderful folks.
I imagine you could say that about anybody that's in the Berkshire's Farm Table Cookbook. I know I can say that just from the few that I've read. I want to thank you both. I feel bad we ran out of time. I got a couple other things I have to cover, but I wanted to get into the meat part because so many people are having trouble finding someone to butcher animals that you can buy inexpensively now that are raised right here within 25 miles of Wichita. You just can't get a slot at the butcher shop to get them fixed up. It's an interesting concept. Look, you guys, I got to thank you so much for being a part of the program today. The book is wonderful, and we're going to give away a copy.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Thank you for having us.
We're happy to hear from your listeners if they can contact us through the website, berkshiresandbeyond.com.
There you go.
Take care. Thank you.
All right, and folks, there's links at everything that we've talked about direct to the Berkshires and Beyond, their website. There's links to the video, to their Facebook page. You can find it all. GoodLifeGuide.com is the answer for everything, including the virtual wine tasting coming up tonight at 6 p.m. Now, you want a copy of the Berkshire's Farm Table Cookbook? 125 homegrown recipes from the New England Hills? You know the drill. Caller number 5, Max, will be on the phone. 316-869-1330. Call now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.